fly near this thing, all right?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, get back! Get back! It's a live grenade! Get back!
Welcome to Fearful Symmetry.
Let me tell you the story of a TV show. It may not be the most insane TV program in history, but it's up there. And it came out of Albania in the 1990s. And it definitely got help from the good old USA. Now, America has always been the king of trashy TV because, you know, it's who we are. And for years, we've exported our most glorious, god-awful, and immensely popular TV shows to countries around the world who just lap this shit up. Baywatch, for instance, with its sun-baked, well-oiled, beautifully vapid American lifeguards, was a global mega-hit. And the primetime soap Dallas, showcasing rich and corrupt Texans with all their sleazy oil deals, boozing, backstabbing, and infidelities, irresistible to the international audience who loved nothing more than consuming the depraved fantasies of the decadent American West. That is entertainment. Keep in mind that all this American TV programming came relatively cheap for TV stations abroad. If a nation wasn't rich, and Albania was by far the poorest country in Europe at this time, it could hardly afford to make its own TV dramas. In the 1990s, which is when the events of this tale occur, Albanian TV was pretty dull and musty, with state-run music pageants, old black and white films, lackluster news broadcasts, cheap talk shows, so gaudy American TV imports proved incredibly popular. That's what was so extraordinary about the time Albania produced its own homegrown dramatic series and then saw it become a hit, a smash hit. A sensation, not only in Albania, but throughout the Balkan states and beyond, bigger than anything that ever came from the USA. The show was called Embelsia Ajetes, or The Sweetness of Life, but soon it simply became known as Hatchet Man. And it was so weird and controversial and fiercely popular that its cancellation led to the so-called Night of Plunges, when dozens of bereaved citizens jumped to their death in the treacherous Lana River. How is this possible? What kind of show could produce this demented and dramatic effect? What was Hatchet Man? Well, the show always opened innocently enough with a long credit sequence of mountains and smoke rising from farmhouses and waterfalls, all to the sound of a slow traditional Albanian waltz. The pilot episode was kind of a romance. There was a man, Ephraim, a tough but lovable guy who worked the night shift in a food processing plant. And he was smitten with this tender, beautiful young woman, Blurta, who was poor and utterly blind. She occasionally found work in a used tire depot where her acute sense of hearing helped detect air escaping from tire punctures. Blurta was fond of Ephraim, really fond, actually, but she always rejected his love because of some dark, mysterious cloud, some nameless guilt that no one quite understood. Ephraim did not mind. He adored her. He was patient. Every day he brought her some discarded, mildly contaminated food stuff as, you know, a little gift, or maybe some shrubs or flowers he got on the way to work, just some little special thing. And one day, they're together at the annual Festival of the Potato, and they've eaten their fill of the Schlusslava when they begin roller skating down a long path through the ancient potato woods. They don't speak. They're lost in the rhythm and sway of the movement and their interior thoughts, but they're right next to one another, his head almost touching hers. It's very intimate somehow, and we see a strange expression coming over Blurta's face, as if she's thinking of something dark and difficult. And suddenly, in the path right before them, they see a massive albino groundhog, 3 feet tall, just standing there, quietly growling. And they swerve to avoid it and tumble to the ground, and they hit the ground hard and violently roll towards a cliff. It's all shown in this extended and somewhat preposterous slow-mo. But once they come to rest at the edge of the precipice, Blurta turns to Ephraim and excitedly says, "I remember now. I didn't kill my brother. It was an accident. It was an accident." And he says to her, "That's what has haunted you all your life. That was a memory you were afraid of." And they embrace, truly embrace. She's weeping. They're both weeping. It's sentimental, but wonderful to see. They finally found each other. And then the scene cuts to Ephraim's kitchen, where he is making her his birek, a delicious pie that's an Albanian staple. And you can see that he's quite proud of his cooking, and Blurta is smiling and happy and touching everything with her hands. And Ephraim starts telling her that he has spoken to a certain Dr. Darku, an eye surgeon from Tirana, the big city, who thinks that there's a good chance he can help her regain her vision. And she says to him, "Oh, really? Could it ever be so, Ephraim?" And that's kind of the end. Only right at that moment, there's a loud noise as a huge figure in a ski mask bursts into the room wielding a hatchet. And he just starts hacking away at the lovers. He's hacking at their flesh. It's gory until they are definitely, definitely dead. And then the guy with the hatchet just leaves. And the old waltz music returns, the credits, the waterfall. You know, the show is just over. So totally weird, right? Disturbing and awful, but you know, intriguing. What is going on? What kind of story is this? Every Albanian who saw the show is talking about it. Some are angry, some are joking, some are scared, some are just mystified. And by the next week, everyone is watching. And it's an entirely different tale. This one is about four orphans, just kids, and they've suffered things no children should ever have to suffer, and they make a secret pact that they will always be there for one another. It's a kind of Stand By Me thing. And actually, there's a lot of comedy in this one, because the oppressive, tight-assed head of the orphanage is a bit of a fool, and the constant butt of their jokes. And by the end, a kind of redemption arises, because one of the boys turns out to be a chess prodigy. Well, actually, he's more of a chess hustler, because he cheats and he's always hiding pawns in his pocket. But no one seems to discover this, and he beats the local champion, and there's a big story in the newspaper. And before you know it, all the kids are adopted by a wealthy Russian family. This is after Glasnost, right? And the father is an industrialist from Moscow with a huge plastics operation. And the mother used to dance at the Bolshoi, but now she feels herself devoted to children because her own childhood in Yakutsk was so difficult. And at the end, they're all at the sprawling family dacha, and we see the kids dressed in nice new clothes, and they're drinking American Coca-Cola and singing and horsing around, and they're just so damn happy they almost want to cry. They take a moment of appreciation and renew their vows to be there for each other forever and ever. And then, right as the show is obviously coming to an end, there is a knock at the door. And for some reason, they stiffen. and we see the doorknob slowly start to turn, and the door begins to slowly open with a weird creaking sound, and everyone is holding their breath, and it's just Svetlana, the new mother, and she's bringing in a big platter of pierogies. Well, there's much laughter and shaking of heads all around. Everyone is hugging and joking and reaching for the food. When, bam, a man explodes out of the closet. It's the insane figure again, whirling with his hatchet. And there's just screaming and blood everywhere. This psycho killer is just cutting everyone to pieces. There's severed limbs. And Svetlana's head is now rolling on the floor. And in seconds, everyone has just been brutally murdered. And then the stranger, this hatchet man, he just leaves. And that's it. No explanation. The show is over. Cue the credits with the music and the farmhouses and the waterfalls. And now the furor really begins. Religious authorities denounce the grotesque immorality of the show. Politicians from the Kuvendi, the Albanian parliament, decry the excessive violence and promise corrective legislation. Newspapers publish indignant articles demanding that the show be immediately removed. Rumors begin circulating that American producers must be involved because, you know, only the Americans could create anything this violent and meaningless. But the show goes on. It turns out that the daughter of the president loves Hatchet Man. And her friends love the show. And tons of Albanians love the show. It's a sensation. Even though the premise of the show is insane and the murder depicted is brazen and excessive, people love it. And it's considered very cool, very Western. So the show stays on. And every week there's a different drama. Maybe some laughs or heartache or overcoming challenges. And then every week at the very end, the hatchet man enters the library or the barn or the coffee shop and wipes out every living soul. And he always gets away with it. And Hatchet Man starts to get a huge cult following, not just in Albania, but in Montenegro and Turkey and even Russia, where bootleg VHS tapes of the show are rapidly shared across the country. Soon there are Hatchet Man posters and Hatchet Man shirts. Children are playing with Hatchet Man dolls and eating Hatchet Man breakfast cereals. Poets are writing odes to Hatchet Man and swingers go to Hatchet Man sex parties. A celebrated artist cooperative from Tirana creates a Hatchet Man monument that's 3 stories tall, depicting the crazed killer with a ski mask and an enormous silver hatchet that gleams in the sun. And immediately, this becomes a kind of holy place, a pilgrimage destination for devotees of the show. And everyone in the city goes there for weddings and birthdays and graduations. Hatchet Man becomes the ultimate anti-hero hero. Watching the show becomes a collective ritual, the experience carrying a kind of exquisite nihilistic tension because everyone starts to crave the final release, the abrupt and delicious moment when Hatchet Man bursts forward and in full gore dispatches every tender human being in the vicinity and renders them little more than mincemeat. And so the question arises, who dreamt up this kind of magnificent abomination? Who created a show this incredibly twisted? Well, that is a good question. Back in a moment. When I originally got turned on to this wonderfully freaky television show that is Hatchet Man, I figured I'd find the people who actually made the thing and, you know, get the comic lowdown on who came up with what idea, how it came to fruition, their feelings about how it all panned out. But that did not happen. You know the saying, those who know don't speak, those who speak don't know. Maybe it came out of the Baltics, because I had trouble speaking to any of the core creators. Hatchet Man seemed to be shrouded in murk, its makers as odd and elusive as the series itself. So let me begin with what I do know about its origins. Let me begin with the great Albanian filmmaker Samer Kambaro. In the 1990s, Kambaro was the rarest of birds in Albania, a celebrity. Only 2 years before, he had directed the widely acclaimed film Death of a Groundhog, which went on to win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. Death of a Groundhog tells the story of a military regiment courageously raising groundhogs amid the bloody purges of a brutal dictatorship. It was a brave and bleak picture, the first film in Albanian history to criticize communism. No less than luminary critic Pauline Kael praised the work, saying it's, quote, grim evocation of history, called to mind Renoir's Dark March of the Plumbers. The film thrust Kambaro into international prominence. Even though most Albanians had never seen the picture, there were basically no theaters in the country for film art. Everyone started hearing of the great Albanian film master. And Kambaro had an imposing and imperial presence. He was a big man with crow-black hair tied into braids, long beard, and wild blue eyes. He wore a crimson velvet cape, for Christ's sake. The cape had seen better days, but you get the idea. He also sported an eagle-headed walking cane that he brandished when making a point emphatically, and he insisted on being called Maestro. How are your cookies, Maestro? Does a camera angle meet with your approval, Maestro? So, one day, Kambaro strode into the musty offices of the State Committee for Television and Radio Broadcasting, like he owned the joint, and pitched the idea of making a homegrown Albanian TV series. Apparently doing his best turn as Rasputin, Kambaro finished his presentation by pounding on the table, gazing fiercely into the eyes of each of his listeners, and booming, "Brothers, Albania must make great TV." Now, the bureaucrats viewed the matter with astonishment. It wasn't Kambaro's theatrics. That would have been an entertaining diversion. These lowly paid government creatures chain-smoking smuggled Kent cigarettes in their drab, stuffy rooms with paint peeling along the walls, they appreciated any diversion to their dreary lives. But Kambaro's idea? His proposal was incomprehensible. Struggling Albania barely had any traffic lights outside the capital. They could never afford to make a dramatic television series. It was ludicrous. Impossible. Ludicrously impossible. Who did he think he was to even suggest such a thing? The bureaucrats got quite agitated. But then, Kambaro said something so magical, so wondrous, that permission was granted on the spot, and all the necessary permits were immediately drawn up. What were the magical words, dear listener? It was a variation of the phrase, "I've got the money." Yes, Kambaro informed them that he had already secured funding from a foreign investor. He had the dough for the entire production. And so, he went on to direct the first great Albanian TV series, Embelsia e Jetes, or The Sweetness of Life. For actors and crew, the gig was a godsend. It was not easy to be an artist in Albania. Most of them had worked years on dreadful propaganda, terrible dreck, just to survive. If they got involved somehow with an interesting film, there was almost no money, and it would take years to finish. But this show? The pay was excellent, the production fully funded, and Kambaro, he was a real director, an artist, not a hack. Everyone was primed for an incredible experience. Only, from the very first day, the pace of production moved at breakneck speed. No rehearsals, long scenes done in a single take, crews running from one set to another. There were 14 one-hour episodes to shoot, and sometimes, crew members complained, it felt as if they were zooming through production before some invisible fist came out of the sky and demolished the series. Cambero became increasingly caustic and temperamental and was given to lifting that cane of his and saying, "You foolish insect, be silent." And if he wasn't satisfied with a scene or frustrated during a meeting, he just stormed away, disappearing for hours. And what do you do with such a man? Well, the folks around him accepted these eccentricities. That's what a creative genius does, right? They didn't know. They knew about starving farmers, luckless soldiers, tattered government officials, but creative film geniuses, who were they to question? All they knew was that when he returned after storming off, he was brimming with brilliant ideas. They felt that Maestro was obviously on a much higher creative level than they were. And maybe he was. But years later, we learned that all the times Cambero went running off, he went running to a certain woman. And when he returned with the most wondrous scene spelling out of his head, it was this woman who had put them there. Yes, in many ways, the most interesting thing about the famous director was actually his wife, Rowena. And as you'll discover, without Rowena, there's no Hatchet Man.
You've been listening to part one of Hatchet Man, a production of Fearful Symmetry, written, performed, and produced by Bob Paris. Music from Voyagers, The Shed, and John Bartman. For more information, please go to fearfulsymmetry.org.